Yeah, okay.
Today is Sunday, December 3rd, 2017, and I want to say hello to the students who honor me with their presence and to all the thousands listening across the wide expanse of the Torah world. Before I begin, let's go back to last Monday. I just want to fill in. I mentioned Nina Adlerblum, and I saw no one knew who she was, and we started talking about her. So all I want to do is be sure I pulled it together properly, that when Nixon came to visit, they cleaned out the King David Hotel. Only one person was allowed to remain, and that reached the New York Times, Dr. Nina Adlerblum. And as we said, she was the daughter of Rabbi Hirsch's son. She was a personality in her own right. She was in her 90s. She lived full time in the King David, which tells us that she was not poor. And why did they let her remain? Well, she was in her 90s. She was ill. She was Professor Dewey's Talmidah Mufheket. She had published books. When Trump came, my dear friend Irwin Shapiro, also in a wheelchair, but he didn't have the same influence. He had to get out, but she was allowed to remain. Then I want to correct an error I made at the end of Shir. I skipped a generation. We spoke about Chaim Potok and his new book and what's happening and what's left of his family. And I mentioned that there were two brothers, Chaim and Shimon. Simon, who was my classmate for 16 years, both became conservative rabbis. And then there was a daughter, but the Rosh Yeshiva that you all know, Rabbi Tzvi Sabalatsky, who's a first great Talmud Chacham, is a grandson. In other words, the youngest daughter, Bela Potok, is the mother of Rabbi Tzvi Sabalatsky, and she should live and be well. As far as I know, she's alive and well. And I just want to correct myself, because I had Tzvi Sabalatsky. I made him 20, 30 years older. I had him as a son-in-law. He's a grandson. His father, who's no longer alive, I'm told, is the Sabalatsky, and he is the son. So that corrects. And with this point, we're ready to roll. My dear students, I'm embarking on an interesting venture, and I want to protect myself because life has thrown me fastballs, curveballs, screwballs, and what have you, and you learn from experience. So I don't want anyone to say, this Rakefid, what a faker. He talks about Reb Henoch Fishman, why isn't Rakefid in Mir? He talks about Meir Kahana, why isn't Rakefid in the Kach party propagandizing for Meir? He talks about Reb Aaron Cutler, why isn't Rakefid in Lakewood? He talks about Reb Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lesson, why isn't Rakefid in Slabatka in Bnei Brak? You talk about Mori Rebbe, Rab Soloveitchik. How did Rakefid dare to go in Aliyah when he knew that Rav Soloveitchik was opposed to good machanchim leaving America? And I want to protect myself, of course. I wrote about Meir Kahana recently. They asked me to review the second book that came out on him. And did you see the letters to the editor in Jewish Action? How dare Jewish Action publish about Meir Kahana? How dare Rakefid write about him? We have the fascists today. It's the left today are like the old right wing. They're so fascist that only they know the truth and only they have the key to success. And everyone else is a rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, ruthless, depraved, degenerate, devout, surreptitious, no good, apikiris, dog. And I just want to introduce you to a Gemara in Gittin, Daf Chet Amid Bet, Baba Batra, Daf Kuf Lamed Dalet Amid Bet, where the Gemara says, Palginin Dibura. And what Palginin Dibura means is when Edim say this, give Edim say Edim, sometimes we take part of it, we don't take all of it, we divide it up. So I have to tell you, the fact that I'm going to talk about five individuals who greatly influenced my life, doesn't mean that I'm a rubber stamp. I'm an individual, and you all know my viewpoint. We've spoken about it many times. I go against the grain of the right-wing Torah world today, where everyone is chassid and everyone looks the same and thinks the same and acts the same. The world I come from, everyone is an individual, everyone is different, everyone is B'Tselem Elokim, everyone has free choice, everyone paints their own picture. And the framework obligates all of us, the Vah Hashem, Zu Halacha, demands, commands, respect, observance. But the pictures, each individual has to paint his own picture. So Palgin and Dibura, these are five people who had great influence upon me, doesn't mean I accept it or live in, you follow me, Binyamin? Doesn't mean I live exactly the way they did. I painted my own picture, and it's my picture. You have the right to paint your picture. Okay, so that's just to protect myself, that no fascist should try to shoot me down for not being a total follower of these five individuals. And now let me go further. You reach a certain stage in life, and Modela HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's very moving for me, the age I've reached, and I need another 120 plus years. I have so much more that I want to give over. And I hope the Ribbono Shel Olam is listening, but I want to thank him for the first part of life. And you want to say thank you. It's people want to honor me. I agree to one thing, nothing to do with age. It has to do with Shvatami, the affair in Ranana, to raise funds to do more things in Russia. But to receive honor is not the answer. It's to give honor, to show appreciation. Hakarat HaTov is so important that I heard many times from the Rav that it's the basis of Yiddishkeit. He would quote the Chabad HaLevavot. I'll give you a quote in a minute. And the Rav once said a word that I shake when I say it over, that Moshe Rabbeinu almost gave up on Yetziat Mitzrayim because of Hakarat HaTov. And the Rav quoted the Gemara in Sota, that here Moshe is pleading with Pharaoh, let my people go, let my people go. And comes time to go, Pharaoh is out to throw them out. And Moshe says, I gotta wait. Where is the Aron of Yosef HaTzadik? We only survived as Jews because Yosef paved the way. He enabled us to survive the civilization in Egypt, the great Western civilization of the time. We only survived as Jews because Yosef taught us how to be a good Jew in Pharaoh's court. And he won't leave. Moshe Rabbeinu won't leave. They find Serach Bat Asher, that she yet knew the earlier generations. And she knew where Yosef was, where his Aron was. And Moshe told her, go and find the Aron, and we can't leave till you bring it to us, and we'll take it with us. And that's how important Hakarat HaTov is. Now, I want to quote from a Sefer that just came out a few weeks ago. The Sefer already cannot be bought, I'm told. There's the usual story. Simcha L'Arav Secha. It's published. Chidushei Torah Shel Hagaon, Reb Simcha Levi Soloveitchik, put out by Reb Yosef HaLevi Soloveitchik. Let me explain what it's about. Reb Simcha Soloveitchik was a son of Reb Chaim. You're dealing with, not a son of Reb Chaim, was a brother of Reb Chaim. You're going back, he's the son of the Beit HaLevi. He was a younger brother of Reb Chaim. If I'm not mistaken, he was a half-brother. The Beit HaLevi had children. He was married three times, but had children from two different wives. And he came to America. He was a Gaon Adir, but no one knew about him. He got involved in America, the Rabbinate. He left many Kitfei Yad. His son, you all know the name. If you grew up in America, Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik of Spring Valley was the same name as Moriah Rebbe. They were cousins. And he was the Rav in Spring Valley, Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi, and he had the Kitvei Yad. His granddaughter. I hope, again, I'm not skipping or putting in an extra generation. His granddaughter married Rabbi Yosef Halevi Soloveitchik, the middle son of Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik. So that it was a Soloveitchik marrying a Soloveitchik. Between them, one-tenth of their blood is the same. In other words, they come down from the Beit HaLevi from two different wives. So it's one-tenth of their blood. Now, Rabbi Yosef lives in the Old City. He's a Gaon Adir, a Tzadik Yesod Olam. And he published, not the Kitva Yad, I showed it to you in class a few months ago. He put together in this volume all the Kitva Yad, but without editing it. In other words, there's no typeset. It's not computerized. It's in the Ktav Yad of Reb Simcha Soloveitchik. In the introduction, beginning on page 5, Reb Yosef talks about one of the big problems in the world today. People are frum. They're not Ehrlich. And it's hard to translate. If you don't know Yiddish, you can't appreciate what I'm saying. But people are frum. And he tells the following story, which I've heard many times over. His father, Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, who I knew intimately, the younger brother of Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, the brother of my chemistry professor, Rav Shmuel Soloveitchik. I learned by all three brothers. So Rabbi Aaron I was very close to. And Rabbi Aaron, years ago, Yeshivat Brisk, Chicago, so a young father comes to him. He wants to make a shidduch. His daughter is going out with this boy from the yeshiva. And he asked Rabbi Aaron, is he really frum? And Rabbi Aaron answers him, as Ehrlich. And the poor father, who evidently didn't appreciate the Yiddish, says, I want to know if he's frum. And Rabbi Aaron says to him, gets very upset, and if you know Rabbi Aaron, he says, frum, agalich is frum, a yid is Ehrlich. A priest from Ehrlich. And you see, Rabbi Yosef HaLevi Soloveitchik finds fault. This is why one of the reasons that the book already, any book he puts out, within a few weeks they put a cherem on it and they don't let it circulate. He is very upset with the Haredi world, where he feels they don't know who Reb Chaim Soloveitchik was. They don't know the real Brisk, and the basis of Brisk was Ehrlichkeit. Not to be frum, a galach can be frum, but a Jew has to be, how can you explain Ehrlichkeit? The whole personality has to be sealed, enthused with Torah, decency, helping someone else. And here, Yosef HaLevi goes into Hakarat HaTov, and I hear the echo of it's on page 5 of the introduction to the book. Hachova talovet omer shayisod shel kol hamidat hatovat hu hamidah shel Hakarat HaTov. The basis. Why do we have to be loyal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Hakarat HaTov. He created the world. He gave us life. He gave us the Torah. And he goes on and on in the introduction. You can see it's a beautiful introduction. That Hakarat HaTov, it's an entirely different human being. The Ehrlichkeit has to be there. The humility, the humbleness. And I need not elaborate. Think what's going on today with Shmuel Orbach and his followers. And if that's Yiddishkeit, where are we at? You understand the heartache, the people. People want to get to the airport to get back to America after Sukkot, and 5 people in one family can't get out of Shari Chesed, where they have a home or rented for the Chag, and all of them missed the plane, disrupted their lives. There was someone in tomorrow's class will be here, Professor Tarrigan. His wife came back up north helping her daughter, gets back to Yerushalayim, and she's not a youngster, she's one of the early Stern College graduates, gets back after a hard day all the way up north, helping her daughter with the many children, daughter just gave birth, etc., etc. and she reaches the entrance to the city, and the bus can go no further. She can't get to the central bus terminal. She can't get a bus. She has to walk from the bridge back to Shari Chesed, where the Targums live. So you understand what I'm saying? This is not, this may be frumkeit. It's not elichkeit. It's not hakarat hatov. It's not decency. So hakarat hatov is very, very important. I look back, and I chose five individuals that had a great impact upon me. I want to begin with Rav Penick Fishman, who's really not known widely. And I want to tell you about his life. I wanted to spend more details here about his life so you should understand who we're talking about. I also want to mention, as I speak about his life, and I'll give you the source, much of what I'm talking about I heard from him, but when you have a source in front of you, it puts it together in a beautiful, organized fashion. And every name I'll mention, every yeshiva, if you're familiar with the scholarship that God has privileged me to publish, I'm not talking about what I've taught and what I have prepared to teach, but the scholarship I've been permitted and privileged to publish, every name, every yeshiva I've published about over the decades. Now, Reb Chedek Fishman, his years, to put him into context, didn't live long, 1910 to 1965. And the source I'm quoting from, two volumes came out, led by his grandchildren, many of whom are learning in Lakewood, Chidushei Rabbi Chanoch Henech. This is volume one on the Masechet Sanhedrin, Baba Kama, Vinyanim Shonim, and it was published Tash Chsach, so that would be, if I'm not mistaken, 2008. And the second volume appeared much more recently. His grandson worked on it, Rabbi Yosef Chaim Shtimla, and all the grandchildren and all the Banim and Chatanim sign off. Now, he was born in a city, if I'm pronouncing it right, Brezhya, and he was known as the Brezhina. In the yeshiva at that time, when I went to yeshiva, so my last name was Rothkopf. So I was known as Rothkopf. Kid next to me is Gratna. He's known as Gratna. Face another kid is Brandspiegel. In Europe, you weren't known by your last name. You were known in the Litvishi yeshiva, the city you came from. That's, I would be called Aaron Brangsa, okay? Aaron, where were you born? London? Am I right? Where are you from? Aaron, where you from? No, you're Hillcrest. One second, I'm white is not here. Aaron, Hillcrest. You would be known as Aaron Hillcrest, do you follow? So he was known as the Brezhena. That's where he came from. A little shtetl, which I believe was in Poland. And a very poor family. Then he made up his mind already at the age of 12, Libo Chashka B'Torah. And I have to tell you, by the age of 12, I was not any different than Reb Chenech. From the age of 11, 12 on, I we'll talk about it when I want to talk about what we were like. But first let me talk about the Rebbe. Not very different. Libo Chashk B'Torah, and he wanted to go to Branowitz. He wanted to study by Rabbi Chanan. So first of all, you need money to go. How do you get money for car fare? You should be aware that his grandmother was already living in the United States, his mother's mother. And he mentioned to her he'd like to go to Branowitz, and she sent him $2. It's all indicated here. $2, which was a fortune of money at that time, that paid for his car fare to Branowitz. And all his life, he mentioned his grandmother, that it's because of her he got to the Torah world. He named his first daughter Itka in memory of this grandmother. Now, when we say Branowitz, we say Rabbi Chanan, that opens up another world. The big machloket going on now in the Litvish world, and it's not a happy machloket to say the least. So you have, we mentioned Shmuel Orbach, Rav Shmuel Orbach from Shari Chesed. All right, one part. the opposition, so-called, they say it's Rav Steinman, Rav Aaron Yehuda Leib Steinman. No, Rav Aaron Yehuda Leib Steinman, he's 103, 104. They accuse him of being in favor of Nachal Charedi, of saying that he quotes Rav Shach, that Rav Shach always said, if you're not learning, you have to serve in the army. Who is Rav Steinman? He's an Adam Gadol. He's the head, or was the head, of Yeshiva Panovitchilitzi Irim. So you see, there is a concept. You fellas all know of the famous yeshiva, Volozhin, Mir, Slabatka, Telj. But those yeshiva, most of the students learning there were learning on their own. They went to the yeshiva like Lakewood, like Mir. What is unique about Lakewood, like Mir? It's thousands of people learning Torah. It inspires you, but you're already learning on your own. What's more important is the Rebbe who gives you a derech how to learn. And that's Rav Steinman. Yeshiva Letzirim could be the Rebbe, the head of that yeshiva, is more important than any other Rosh Yeshiva you can mention. The same thing with Rebbe Chanan. Branovich was not a yeshiva like Mir, like Volozhin. Rebbe Chanan Wasserman. Rebbe Chanan Wasserman, that yeshiva was a stepping stone to teach you how to learn. And that's where he went. And he was there for about 6-7 years, very close to Rebbe Chanan. In the literature world, what counts is a hata gutta cup. You have a good head. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for the mind. This is not chassidus. This is not frumkeit. In the yeshiva world, elichkeit is a problem. That's why the Muslim movement came, to help create elichkeit. But a gutta kav, oh boy, what you could get away with in a Litvish yeshiva if you had a gutta kav, as I will explain one day, it's not for now, but they had a soft spot in their heart, the out of Slabatka, Rav Nathan Svi, a gutta kav, Rav Aaron Kotler, a gutta kav, we'll come to that. So he had a good head, an edle kav, a good head. Now, in 1929, he wanted to go to Mir. Mir was the great pull. Mir in Europe, in the interbellum period between World War I to World War II, there was nothing like Mir Yeshiva. That pulled in the best minds. Oh, what went on in Mir? There wasn't a real focal shear there, but it was the atmosphere. And he wants to go to Mir. Now, at that time, 1929, Mir had tremendous financial problems. We're going to come to it in our Monday class, with Agudas HaRabbanim and the Central Relief. This is the Depression. You're looking at my father, all his life, my mother, the scars of the Depression were tangible in my family. My father was in pharmaceutical school. My father was very bright. He had hundreds in the Latin regions, the mathematics. He got George Washington High School. So my father was very bright. He dropped out of school. The family support. He worked for the post office. All his life, he never would leave the post office. People offered him jobs. Max, you can make a living. Come on, come into business with us. No, the post office will not go on. They'll always have a check. My mother had money in 10 different banks. I said, Mom, what are you, crazy? What are you putting it, $100 here, $100 here, $100? She says, I had to wait in line to take out, they let you take out $10 during the Depression. If you're in 10 different banks, you can take out 10 times $10. So you can imagine what Mir was like, and Rav Nathan was very hard to get in. And a whole group, this is a true story, you'll see here. A whole group goes to Mir from Branovich, and there was some meeting of the Rosh Yeshiva, the Bar HaYeshiva, and Reb Nosson Tzvi Finkel and Reb Elchanan Wasserman are at the meeting. And when this group comes to Mir, Reb Nosson Tzvi has to interview them, and he says, before he interviews them, is the Brezhne here, the Brezhne. And poor Reb Chana Elchias, he's being singled out. He's worried stiff. He goes into the Rosh Yeshiva, to Reb Nosson Tzvi, and Reb Eliezer Yehuda, Reb Lezer Finkel, Reb Nosson Tzvi was his grandson, I don't know if it's a direct relative, it is a great grandson, who was the Rosh Yeshiva who just died now. But this is Reb Eliezer Yehuda, not Reb Nosson Tzvi. Reb Nosson Tzvi, his grandson was named for the Mashkiach, the famous Reb Nosson Tzvi Finkel, the father of Reb Eliezer Yehuda. This is Reb Eliezer Finkel, the famous Mira Rosh Yeshiva, not the Baal Mitzvah. That was his father, the Mashkiach. He's the Mira Rosh Yeshiva. His father was Mashkiach from Slapatka. And Reb Eliezer Yehuda sends for the Breshman. He goes in, and Reb Henech is, how do you know about me? What happened? He says, let me tell you a story. I was just at a meeting of the Rav HaYeshiva with Reb Elchanan Wasserman, and he said to me, I'm sending you a group of students. You can take whoever you want, but at the Breshna, send back to me. Don't take him in. And Reb Eliezer Yehuda says to him, if you're good enough for Reb Elchanan, you're good enough for me. So he accepted him the first one in Tamir. Now in Mir, his life changes because he meets the Mashkiach of Mir, the famous Reb Yeruchim Levavitz. And I have to tell you, the first time I'll come to it, the first time I heard about Reb Yeruchim, I'll tell you the story, but not yet, was from Reb Henech. Reb Yeruchim Levavitz, he was the most dominating, influential figure in Mir. There was no focal shiur. As I said, Reb Eliezer Yehuda was the titular Rosh Yeshiva, responsible for raising funds, gave a shiur klali once a week, but it wasn't that everyone gathered around him. The Mir Mashgiach, Reb Yeruchim, he was already a kelema and a slabotka, and the students loved him. His personality was magnetic. There was Elichkeit. And that relationship, that Reb Henech was the first one to open my ears to Reb Yeruchim, to Levavitz, that name later helps me immeasurably. And I can tell you here that I was privileged. The one thing I did in my life, everything I've done in my life, I did b'chabura with others, working together, planning, thinking, dancing, dreaming. The one thing I did in my life against all odds, with everyone laughing at me and mocking me and making fun of me and, you'll never accomplish, was the documentary on Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, The Lonely Man of Faith, which has been shown on Israeli television already about 10 times. Baruch Hashem, we accomplished something against all odds. You have no idea what I went through, and it's not for now the whole story, but we succeeded. Now, in order to do this documentary properly, on a proper level, we only needed $1 million, $990,000 to be exact. We had to hire people from public service television. We had to get film, archival film all over the world, which they give you with their name on it. And then when you decide what you're going to use, they take the name off, but you have to pay for every frame, vase, $100. It's unbelievable, but that's the way the world works. So who did I get the money from? Abe Levavitz. We didn't have to schnur one penny. Abe Levavitz, Zichrono Levracha. Who is Abe Levavitz? The son of Reb Yeruchim's younger brother, who wound up in America, wound up in East New York, related by marriage to Reb Moshe Feinstein. And Abe was so pleased with my two volumes on the Rav, I came to him with strength. In addition, I told him I knew about your uncle already when I was a kid of 12, Reb Henech Fishman. In addition, my wife's grandparents davened in Abe Levavitz's father's shul in East New York. And my White's grandfather was the Baal Tokeya and the Baal Shachrit on Rosh Hashanah, on Yom Kippur. So Abe Lebovitz knew the family. With all that, the Lebovitz family, we never had to shnur a penny. So I have to tell you that this relationship with the Lebovitz family begins right here at this time. Now in Mir, he's learning B'chavrusa. One of his Chavrutot in Mir is a very famous name, which unfortunately is not that well known today, Reb Shmuel Rizovsky. Does the name mean anything to you? Reb Shmuel Rizovsky, he was a Talmud of Reb Shimon Shkop, studied many years in Grodno with Reb Shimon. Grodno too was like there, Reb Shimon gave a shiur, gave a derech. That was preparatory. That was like the Bochanan's yeshiva. There you had a shiur every day. There you had an Adam Gadol who taught you how to learn, how to think. Reb Shmuel afterwards winds up, he and his brother, Reb Yosef, they wind up in Mir for the same reason that Reb Hanuch wanted to get there. And he and Reb Shmuel hit it off. Reb Shmuel would always speak about Reb Hanuch, the time he learned with him in Mir. Unfortunately, or fortunately, I should say, because it saved Reb Shmuel's life, he had a problem with the Polish draft, and he was going to be drafted into the army, and he got the ability, he got a visa from the Jewish agency, one of the visas that they allotted to the black world, as we call it today, to come in Aliyah. He came in Aliyah about 1938, I would say. He wound up in Petach Tikva. Petach Tikva had a very advanced yeshiva. Originally, the Chofetz Chaim was going to settle in Petach Tikva. They bought a house for him. It later became the yeshiva that the Chofetz Chaim, and they pleaded with him to remain in Europe, which, wow, if he would have settled there, could you imagine the Chofetz Chaim, Petach Tikva? Wow. And Reb Shmuel Rizovsky, from Petach Tikva, what happened was one Jew by the name of Reb Shlomo Yosef Kahaneman, a survivor of the Panovich Rav, comes to Israel, and in the middle of World War II, when the Jews faced total annihilation, he, in B'nai Brak, looks at this mountain and says, we're going to build a great yeshiva here. And he starts the yeshiva. Didn't have the building yet. That comes later. And who does he bring to be Rosh Yeshiva? Reb Shmuel Rizovsky. And he was the famous first great Rosh Yeshiva of Panovich. There are about 10, 12 Sfarim of his, should they publish most of it posthumously, of all his Sheyurim on Shas, an Adam Gadol, a very great individual. Unfortunately, he had a very difficult life, family-wise. I can tell you, between the lines, he married into a very prestigious rabbinical family, and he got divorced. So you can already fill in the dots. And the Chazon Ish said, "Oy vey, even Rashi Yeshiva getting divorced?" And if you know the Chazon Ish, he also didn't have an easy family life. But he remained with his wife. And Reb Shmuel Rizovsky, very fascinating. At the end, then he remarried, and he was very, very happy. The second marriage was made in heaven, and she died young, predeceased him. And then his first wife, in the last year when he was ill with the yenem machla that you struggled with for 2 years, 3 years, she remarried him to take care of him. So you see, it's like a movie. If this would make an interesting movie, but he was Reb Hanuch's Chavruta. What is my tie to Reb Shmuel Rizovsky? I had a Talmud in the 60s whose life, I told you, today I have no influence on anyone, although it'll turn out in Ranana I did have influence on someone. But today I'm sitting here in class and everyone's looking at me, why doesn't the Rebbe have a beard, pay his black clothes, conduct himself in third person dignity, mit a goldene Stecken, with a Rebbe cane? So you want to influence me. But when you're teaching kids who are teenagers, you have if you're a good Rebbe, if you're an Elicha Rebbe, you have a tremendous influence. So this young kid was my student long before you youngsters were born. And today he is world famous. He's the top surgeon in Johns Hopkins Hospital. He's won every award under the sun. I can tell you his list of publications, and he changed a certain way of doing an operation. So his wife is the granddaughter of, let me see how it works, his wife is the great niece of Rav Shmuel Rozovsky's second wife. That's my connection to Rav Shmuel Rozovsky. Adam Gadol. All right, now Mir, coming back to Mir. Great people, great people. Coming back to Mir, he's living there. And Reb Lazer Yehuda Finkel did something very unique. There was a new Torah that was given in the 1880s, 1890s, and that, of course, is Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. His Mechutin, Reb Elia Pluzhana, Reb Elia Feinstein used to refer, he says, I was born, I was born before the Torah was given. What he was referring to, I heard this from the Rev many times, referring to is that Reb Chaim revolutionized, we spoke about it, right? Didn't I tell you with the Ritvaz and the chemistry? So Reb Lazer Yehuda, the fellas in Mir, they wanted to go to Brisk. Reb Yitzchak Zev, Reb Velvel Soloveitchik, Reb Chaim's youngest son, was Brisk. He succeeded his father. He didn't have money to run a yeshiva. He wasn't interested in running a yeshiva. He sat like his father. His father never had a yeshiva. The father sat in the cloys and in the shtibble and learned all day, and people came to Reb Chaim and learned with him and saw his derech. And there was no clock in Brisk, no clock. Reb Chaim could daven shachris at 5 in the morning and daven marav at 10 o'clock at night. No clock, learning. When someone came with a shot at Reb Chaim, he sent him to the Briskedayim, to Reb Simcha Zelig Riga, Ekam Paskin, and Ikveis Nishvi, I don't had a Paskin. Same thing with Reb Velvel. He didn't Paskin. Reb Simcha Zelig was still the Dayan. He was killed by Hitler in his 80s. God, you know what Hitler did to us, what the Germans did to us, I don't like. I can't get over it. I still, nightmares. And I wasn't in Germany, I was in America, but we understood what was going on. So, how do you get Talmidim to go to Brisk? Reb Lazer Yehuda every year used to send a group of students to study in Brisk with Reb Velvel, and he supported them in Brisk. They had no expenses whatsoever. He paid their car fare, paid for their food, paid for their lodging. This was Mir. This is the schut that Reb Lazer Yehuda had. And this is how Reb Chenech Fishman winds up in Brisk. And he took extensive notes on Reb Velvel Shayurim. Reb Velvel always said over from Reb Chaim, his father. And then in addition, he polished it, he enlarged it, at times Palginim Dibura. He differed, he had a different guy, a different way to go, a different facher, a different understanding. These notes that Reb Chenech took become very, very important. And this is something you don't know about, but after World War II, in the yeshiva world, they stenciled the notebooks of the Briska who survived the Holocaust. And Reb Henoch Fishman, his friends in Brisk, Reb Noach Bonstein, Reb Leib Malin, their notes passed from hand to hand. Later it formed the basis of Chidushei HaGriz. And Chidushei HaGriz is based upon their manuscripts. And I can still remember after World War II how stenciled these notes, these Masechta, Nisora, Vod from Reb Chaim, you danced with joy. And these were notes that they took in Brisk. And then, gentlemen, the clouds of war are upon them. And the first time, and I was a kid of 12, a kid of 13. I'll come to it, exactly the year. It's a kid. But you know, when you're 12 years old, you're a bright kid already. You don't become bright at the age of 32. You become bright at the age of 12. I see my grandchildren. I still remember them growing up. I already have a great-grandchildren who, before we know it, will be 12 years old. Ah. And I heard something from Reb Henoch. Little did I dream how much I would publish, talk about, give shiurim. And he alluded in Vilna. What happened was Hitler comes, without going into detail, you all know the story. Poland, Russia, Germany, the Communist Empire, back and forth, and all the yeshivot, the Litvishi yeshivot, wind up in Vilna. Why did they go to Vilna? Because the Rav of Vilna, Rav Chaim Moshe Grzeszynski, was revered. He was the Posek Achron, the political leader of the entire Litvisha East European world. The Chaim Moshe. Shelet Tshuvat Achiezer. Total commitment. Vata Yeshiva. Millions of dollars went through his hands. Never a syllable of scandal. What an individual. What elegant. Let me tell you a little story that I heard as a kid. You can read it. It's been today. It's in books about Reb Chaim Moshe. But I was a kid. And I davened in Yeshivat Rabbeinu Chaim Moshe. That was the Salantis competition later. You all know Professor Levitz, Israel Levitz, who teaches here. He went to Chaim Moshe. I went to Salanta. He went to Chaim Moshe in the Bronx. They were about a 20-minute walk apart. And so here Hitler, the storm clouds, the Jews are running away, and a young yeshiva man comes into Reb Chaim Moshe with his bride to introduce her and to get Reb Chaim Moshe's blessing. And Reb Chaim Moshe says, where are your parents? Parents are left behind. They've run to Vilna. Is anyone teaching the young couple the laws of Tarat Mishpacha? And they say, no, we'll pick it up from our friends. And Reb Chaim Moshe goes out of his office, takes the young couple aside, and sits down with them in a side room, no one else present, and teaches them Tarat Mishpacha, and then says to the Rebbetzin to make the wedding, to see that there's a proper meal with Sheva Brachas during these dark periods. This is Reb Chaim Moshe. Because Mamakom Gatluto, you find his Elichkeit, Anbenuto. They don't make Jews like this anymore. Rabban Salvechik once told me about Reb Chaim Moshe. There were other Lamdonim in the generation, but he said, but characterize Reb Chaim Moshe. When you asked him a shayla, he knew exactly where to go for the answer. Which achron to look at. Exactly to know which was the appropriate way, method, approach to solve the problem. Posek mufak. And everyone comes to Vilna, and no one knows how they're going to get out. The Nazis are on one hand, the communists are on the other hand. What do you do? And here's the famous story, which we all owe our Yiddishkeit to, Mr. Senpo Sugihara, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the Japanese consul in Kovno in Kaunas. And somehow it began with Holland, Curacao, Leon. I can't go into all the details. You all know the story. There are movies about this, documentaries, books have been written. And you have a chance. You're going to go through communist Russia, sail to Japan on these visas that are really not real, that you can come into Curacao, you don't need a visa to get in. How do you get there? But at least you have a way to get out of communist Russia. Or no, what are you, crazy? You're going to tell the communists you want to leave? You weren't allowed to leave communist Russia. You all know my wife and I worked in communist Russia. How many people did we send? Rabbi Rubin was one of my shluchim. His late wife, Tzadeket, what she accomplished, what she did afterwards. I write about her in Washington. Remember communist Russia? Socialist paradise. How dare you want to leave? For just thinking you want to leave. Siberia. Are you crazy? You're going to apply to go through Russia to get to Siberia to sail to Japan? You wind up in Siberia. I mean, that whole area. God have mercy. And Rav Chaim Moiseh told them not to go to Japan, to remain put. And I can still remember Reb Henoch alluding to it. Years later, you could feel what this man went through. Tell me, you have a Rebbe. How many of you are chassidim? How many of you know what it means to be a Lubavitcher, to be a Belzer? There's now a movie on the internet of the Belzer Rebbetzin holding a tish with Belzer women. It's a sight to see. Singing the Gudim with them. She's a real personality, the Belzer Rebbetzin. How many of you would go against your Rebbe? Think for a minute. What a problem. Well, you're telling me, what a problem. No, Agudat Yisrael gives it a formal title. Tell me what Archbold writes about. Das Tata. You've heard the concept? Da'at Torah. When people say to me, Rebbe, we'd like your Da'at Torah, I say, you got the wrong Rebbe to ask for Das Tata. You want my opinion? I'll give you my humble opinion. Whether I'm right or wrong, time will I always quote my Rebbe, my Tamir, Rav Soloveitchik, Mori Rebbe's most famous talk. And it might have been given the night I got married, because there was the Mizrahi kid went from my wedding to the convention to speak in Long Beach. Yosef Yecha, how do you know what is right? Halachically, there's no question you know what is right. You have to decide. Tanur di achnayi, you tell God, butt out. It's not the Rebbeinu license business. Lo b'shmam hiv l'meira l'yamki. God gave us the Torah. We have to paskin. But hashkafa, who is right? Yosef or his brothers? Time will tell. But never, here you have Litvisha people, Reb Chaim Moiseh Grudzinski, and they have this dilemma, and the person from Mir, a lot has been written about this individual, Reb Moshe Zupnik, Zeichet Tzadik Levrach, he's no longer alive, but in the documentaries on Mr. Sundihara, you see he speaks. He cries. Sundihara's son, they honored him at Mir Yeshiva in Israel, and he broke down and cried. He said, do you know how many people your father saved? It's not just you saved 3,000, 4,000, 5,000. Today, that 5,000 is 100,000. Okay? Just think. So, Rav Moshe Zupnik didn't know what to do. There was a machlekes in Mir. He's a Mira. He's dealing with Sugihara. And anyone's fault? Oh, okay. He's dealing with Sugihara. And he's pleading for the visas, and he's having yeshiva boys help him. And here in the yeshiva, there are people telling him, you're an apikoros, you're an idiot. And he's starting to think, it's all here. He's starting to think, maybe I should desist, I should raise my hands. Why, how can I go against Reb Chaim Meisser? And Reb Moshe Zuchnik meets Henoch Fishman, and he says to Henoch, I don't know what to do. And Reb Henoch says to him, all I know is, Klal hu b'yodeinu. By uns is da klal, ha-matchil b'davam mitzvah, chayav l'gomra. If you started, finish. And anyone who took the visa and the whole near yeshiva was saved almost to the last student. It's very tragic, those that weren't saved. Those who listened to Reb Chaim Meisser all perished. You follow? Those, the Frumkeit got involved, knew, I've spoke about this maybe 30 years ago, gave major lectures on the international dateline. Do you remember those lectures? Among my best shayurim in the Sunday class, the international dateline. So the big machloikis in Japan, what day do you fast? Do you fast when Yom Kippur is Yom Kippur, or do you fast the next day? Either you've crossed the dateline, or you're before the dateline. And the Chazon Ish paskind against all the rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, that you fast on Sunday, not on, you fast the next day, not on the previous day. And there were a few fellas in Mir, Sam, you hear this, hear it well, who were worried about Frumkeit, and they felt they couldn't fast 2 days, they didn't travel. They said, you know what, we'll go to Japan after Sukkot. After Sukkot, by then the Germans had conquered Vilna, Lita, it was all over, and they were eliminated very quickly in Hitler's inferno. And I remember Reb Henoch Fishman telling me that in Japan, the Fruma fasted the first day in accordance with the Psak, but because they were choshish for the Chazon Ish Shita, many of them didn't eat the second day or ate pachut mekish shayur on the second day. You follow? So I could feel the tremor, the fear, the aggravation. So many years later, a little kid, I sensed, wow. Little did I dream that I would have to get involved one day. Yitzchak, remember the lectures on Das Torah. And Reb Chatzkel Levenstein, many years later, this is written up in the Beis Yaakov Journal in the mid-60s, I believe. I gave the source in class. So Chatzkel Levenstein, who was the Mira Mashkiach, he succeeded Reb Yeruchim Levavitz, who died, I think it was 37 when he died. Reb Chatzkel was asked, I'm starting to speak Yiddish, let me keep to English if I can. Wie kann man das Torah? How can you believe in das Torah? Anyone who listened to Reb Chaim Meisser is not alive, and you're here because you didn't listen. And Reb Chaim Meisser answered that when people give it, Reb Chatzkel answered, when Reb Chaim Meisser, the Dolei Yisrael, give advice, they have to use Seichel HaYashah. They use Torah Seichel, normal thinking, the way the Torah taught them to think. It's not that they're wrong. It's that God willed otherwise. A decent answer is a decent answer. But you see later, and this is what I call hestapanim. When we speak about hestapanim, it doesn't mean hestapanim only from the masses, from the populace. Hestapanim, even from Gedolei Yisrael. And those who listened perished. Those who took the visa and the tickets and the what went on in America with the Chilul Shabbos. Remember Irvin Bunim, they took a cab on Shabbos into Borough Park, into Brooklyn. We need $50,000 by Sunday to buy the tickets for them to travel to Moscow and start the journey to the boat at the other end of Russia to get to Japan. They were all saved. And those who listened. And I heard that from a chinuch. I still remember his thinking aloud. And I give him credit. We were kids of 12, 13. But he treated us like adults. Raised that issue so many years ago. Then he gets to Shanghai. And first they go to Kobe, Japan. You all know the story, Kobe, Japan. The Japanese are very good to the Jews. We spoke about it. It's the unbelievable story that, first of all, according to a professor at Hebrew U, who I just saw last night, Professor Slonim Pomerantz, Slonim-Pomerantz-Slonim, originally a Pomerantz, married named Slonim, Michla. So according to Michla, a genius of a person, Hebrew U professor, so she said that the Japanese really believed the protocols of Zion. And they thought the Jews controlled the world. Well, if the Jews controlled the world, why start up with them? I think the second reason is more important, that Jacob Schiff arranged with Warburg and the banks controlled by the multi-billionaire German Jewish Americans to lend Russia money in 1903, 1904, that money enabled them to fight the Russo-Japanese War. So why be harmful to the Jews? Then when the Germans pressed them, they moved them to Shanghai. And in Shanghai, you had Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, who later becomes the famous Mir Rosh Yeshiva in Israel. You had Reb Chatzkel Levenstein, the Mashgiach. They came to the shul that was built by a Sephardic gentleman who had become a multimillionaire, married to a non-Jew, and he had a dream in the late 20s, and his mother told him in the dream, you have to build the shul, and he built it. What was it? You saw the shul? You were in the shul just now. And they say there were like 410 seats in the shul. It never, basically, if it had a million, they were happy. And when Mir Yeshiva came in, every seat was filled. There was exactly enough seats for the Mir Yeshiva. It's beyond words, the Hashgacha Pratit. And I heard, and this is an interesting comment way beyond Shas, Paiskim, Machshava, but a comment on life that you have to think about. Reb Chenech died quite young. And I remember his friends from Mir, by that time he was a Rebbe, we were on the same faculty. Yeshiva Shabbat Cohen dreamed that one day I would be on the same faculty with Reb Chenech Fishman, Yeshiva Shabbat Yitzchak Hanan, New York, YU, Rosh Yeshiva, and he died quite young. And I remember some of the people were saying, they don't understand it, how could he be sick and have heart problems? He was the Liebling, he was the favorite. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz loved him. Reb Chatzkel Levenstein loved him. He was in Shanghai. We all suffered, but he suffered less because they loved him. Your Talmud and Ehrlichkeit and decency and uprightness. And you see, you never know what a person suffers inside. It's interesting. You know, you think this person has it good, has it easy. It was no picnic to be in Shanghai. I remember when Effie Zurav, Dr. Zurav, came out with his book on the Vanchat Sala, and he very, very wonderful volume, don't misunderstand me, but he is critical of the Vanchat Sala, that they favored yeshiva people, and I told him, you don't have a right to be critical, because until 1941, early 42, no one really knew what Hitler was going to do. No one could ever dream that it would be this bad. So, why not some...
If the Zionist movement was favored Jewish socialists...
Right. They had the same thing, in Europe with the screw visas from the Jewish agency. I remember Rav Volk got hysterical. He said, until we got a visa, they wouldn't let us go to Eretz Yisrael. They didn't want from people. They finally made a deal with the Aguda. They gave them a 5% when essentially the population was 50, 60% from Poland were Agudist type people. If I'm overstating it, so 40%. But he was critical. So I remember Rebbetzin Cohn of Melbourne, Australia. She was born in Shanghai. And his book had just come out at that time. It's about, I can tell you exactly when, it's the year 2000. And she said to me, "You know how I slept in Shanghai? On the floor under my mother's bed. They put a little blanket on the floor, and that's where I slept, under my parents' bed." And they're critical. We had it good in Shanghai. Indeed, you follow it, it wasn't easy. But you never know what's going on in a person's heart. You can see a person that you think, "Oh, he's the happiest person alive. He conquered the world. He did this, he did that." People suffer. None of us have it perfect. Remember the Rav? Tell me, why did the Rav drink so much milk? Ulcers. Exactly. He had ulcers. He had ulcers. No, where did he get the ulcers? Here we worship the ground the Rav walked on. You were shocked when you came from Brookline to New York to see the respect we had for the Rav. Right or wrong, in Boston you treated him all right. He's our rabbi. He's in New York, you saw the Rav around the corner, you jumped up. I remember the wedding, Mr. Abrams' daughter's marriage in Lampert Auditorium. So I remember I was next to a professor who wasn't from, but a professor in Yeshiva College. He was amazed when the Rav appeared all the way in back. 2,000 people jumped up, but he said, "Wow, that is respect." You never know what's going on inside a person. With all that he has, with all difficulties, frustration, etc. So I understand, I'm not going to overstate the case of Shanghai. Now, in Shanghai, he meets his match, and I'll give you more details on her when I finish Reb Hennick's life, but there's no question that marriage and the woman with you makes or breaks an Adam Gadol, basically. I can give you the simplest example of all. Anyone who knew the Rav was the Rav because Rebbetzin Tanya was Rebbetzin Tanya. Even though when you called up the house and asked for Dr. Soloveitchik, the Rebbetzin would say, "Which Dr. Soloveitchik do you want to speak to?" You understand?
Speaking.
No. We had it here. We had it here in Gris. When the last time we were all together, it was a moment in time. I was here with Malka, and the Baron was here with Tova, and Friday night, or Saturday, whatever it was, Tova was speaking, and the dummy who introduced her introduces her as the daughter of the Rav and the wife of Reb Baron. And she got up and she let them have it. A woman is an individual. She stands on her own 2 feet. And David Miller and said, we both said to each other after Shabbos, if we could have recorded that, we would have had a bestseller of Rebbetzin Tova telling off the guy who introduced her. But a wife makes or breaks. There's no two ways about it. And I can give you the opposite example. Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg was slated to be the Gadol Hadar. He was the top student in Slabodka in the Litvish Yeshiva Welt at the turn of the last century. And he didn't achieve it. And part of it, one day we'll talk about it in much more detail when we talk about the Alter of Slabodka and the way he conducted the students and advised them. The marriage that never worked out, that he was forced into, as if to speak. And it didn't work out, and he never remarried afterwards. Never remarried. And he remained in Switzerland, and he was frightened stiff of the world. They offered him so many positions in Israel, and he said, "What can I do? I live in 2 worlds, he said. I'm quoting him. "I live in Slabodka, and I live in the world of scientific Jewish scholarship," he says. "After 120 years, in Olam Haba, I want to be with the Slabodka people. But in this world," he says, "I can't go to Israel because I'll have too much heartache. If I give a lecture at Hebrew U, Hebron Yeshiva, which is the continuity of Slabodka, will be mad at me. If I'll give a lecture in Hebron, the scientific Jewish scholarships whom I correspond with and respect will be angry at me that I'm giving a shiur in an old-fashioned yeshiva." So you see, the woman could be, had he had a good marriage, Rabbi Chiel Yaakov would have gone on to become the biggest rabbi. Never would have wound up in Germany. He ran away from Germany to get out of East Europe. Too many people were gossiping behind his back. Now, in Shanghai, he marries Rivka Teibel Sharashevsky. I'll give you a source about her life in a few minutes. And to have known the Rebbetzin, she was very special. She was an Eisa Kenegdo. You could see the relationship between them. It was a couple, Vahayula Basar Echad. They interlocked, they interconnected. Brilliant lady. Ah, Talmida of Sarah Schneera. She studied in Krakow. The famous Beis Yaakov, the first Beis Yaakov, got out of Europe with miracles, wound up in Shanghai. They married in Shanghai. He was one of the few Mira who married there. Most of the Mira remained single. By the time they reached Israel or reached America after World War II, they were known as the Altamira. No one there was younger than 30. Many already were in their mid-30s, Altabucks. But that was the reality. They wound up in Europe. They couldn't marry. They had no panasa. So they kept on learning. Later, they made a shidduch. Here, they wound up in Shanghai. Were they going to make a shidduch with a Chinese lady? So she becomes a very big influence in his life. After he dies, Lo Aleinu, a number of years later, she remarries another Altamira, Rabbi Wernick, who I believe was Mashkiach in what you call Skokie today, Hebrew Theological College in Chicago. He too was widowed, and they remarried Bezivik Sheni, and they spent many fine years in Arzei Habira in Yerushalayim. Wow. All right. The war ends, and the Mira have to decide who goes on Aliyah, who goes to America. The truth of the matter is it was practically split down the middle, and thank God it was split. It gave a tremendous boost to Torah study in America, in Israel. You all know what Mir became from its humble beginnings here. It's the biggest yeshiva in the world. It's a yeshiva where everyone can find his place. They have Sheyurim and Chabur is more than Sheyurim. Again, it's no focal figure. There are many figures in there giving Sheyurim. There's a titular Rosh Yeshiva from the Finkel family, but the yeshiva is very broad. Yiddish, Hebrew, Russian. I would imagine there's French Chaburis in there. It's really many different little yeshiva under one roof. When you add it all up, it's something like 5,000-6,000 students and many Batei Midrashim and very crowded. And if the Seder begins at 9 and you don't take your seat by 9:15, you've lost your seat. Someone else is allowed to come in and sit there and learn. Many went to America. And Rav Chenech comes to America, Rav Avram Kalmanovich becomes the key figure in America. Rav Avram Kalmanovich was a Rav in Eastern Europe, was a product of the yeshiva there. He was the president of the Mir Support Association, alumni, call it what you wish. He was sort of like the Panovitcher Rav, someone who had tremendous vision way beyond the narrow little yeshiva boy. He's the individual who went to Morgenthau and cried on his desk that you must help the Jews. And this Morgenthau, who was an assimilated Jew, you understand what we're talking about, broke down and cried and saved souls, did things that we had the whole State Department against us, Roosevelt against us. I need not tell you, Roosevelt wouldn't lift a finger, and they were placating the Arabs. So you all know what's been written about Roosevelt subsequently. And this was Rav Avram Kalmanovich. And he saw these people coming in. It was about 47, I would say, when they reached America. He organized Mir and began in Rockaway, And today, of course, it's in the Flatbush. And one of the first people that he called upon to give a shiur was Reb Henoch Fishman. Obviously, they weren't paying too much money, to say the least. And now he's married, he has children, and it's time to find a job that will pay. And here we come to the miracle of Mir in America. I'm sitting here because of that miracle. Rabbi Rubin is sitting here because of that miracle. And this went on in every city where there was a day school. There were few, far between, but there were day schools, and they needed rebbeim. And the mirror went all over the country. You will not find the yeshiva. I mentioned Chicago. I can mention Boston, the Rav. Rabbi Rubin is a witness to the mirror that came in there and the influence that they had. The Rav chose the best when all is said and done. And there was the yeshiva in the Bronx, Yeshiva Salanta. I'll talk about it in more depth when I talk about myself, where I'm coming from, and this meeting between a little American kid and Gedolei Mir. But Salanta, yeshiva, only yeshiva at the time, located in the East Bronx. What can I tell you? In the Bronx, there probably were more than 1 million Jews. If 1% of the 1 million was Shomer Shabbos, I'm overstating the case. 1%, I'm overstating the case. We'll explain the mentality, but not yet. And the principal of Salanta during the 40s was Rabbi Dr. Shimon Federbusch. Name mean anything to you? He had been chief rabbi of Finland. He got out with his life, became the principal of Salanta, and he was a big Mizrachiite. He was not a Yudapeish yeshivish person. He was more a doctorate Chachmat Yisrael, but a very fine individual. I got smicha in the famous picture of my smicha class, which I identify everyone in Washington. His son's in that picture. Son got smicha from the yeshiva. But now, after World War II, right at this moment, about 47, they hire a new principal for Salanta. He previously had been in, and I believe in RJJ, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Kagan. He was an old-time Mir, a Yudapeish, a yeshivish person, and his dream is to turn Salanta into a more religious, Ehrlich, Frum institution. And there was another yeshiva that began in the Bronx, Abba Torah, that was more, I would say, more northeast. And they tried to combine the two, and Rav Kagan thought in terms of building a masifta, and he turns to the Mir in Brooklyn and brings in two rebbeim into Salanta, Rav Fishman and Rav Yankelovich, Rav Gershon Yankelovich, which is a name that you should all recognize. He died, what is it, 2-3 years ago, at the age of 102, if I'm not mistaken. The Smesifta never worked out. The merger never worked out. But now you have Rav Gershon Yankelovich teaching 7th grade in Salanta, and Rav Henoch Fishman teaching 8th grade in Salanta. And I can tell you exactly when they got there. The first year they taught in Salanta, 1948-1949. The second year, 1949-1950. The third year, the year I graduated, 1950-1951. My first Rebbe, 7th grade, 49-50, was Reb Gershon Yankelovich. I never really felt the full impact of Reb Geshen. It could be it was my fault that I wasn't old enough. I was that year 11, 12. It could be that he yet was not, that was his second year, he did not yet know how to relate to youngsters like we were. What's interesting is, a few years later, he taught my middle brother, Levi, Leonard, my brother, the ophthalmologist, retired today, Yerushalayim, but still teaching like his brother. He's teaching in medical, you know, ophthalmology. And my brother loved him. And when I met Reb Geshen so many years later at some YU function in America, I told him I was your Talmud, seventh grade. He said, I said, not you. He said, I taught your brother. He said, but Reb Kenneth Fishman was my Rebbe 50-51. And that's when our association began. Something else about Reb Chenich, that section of the Bronx attracted quite a few Litvisha Lamdanim. He was very close to two individuals who we all interacted with. You've heard these names, I trust. Reb Noach Bornstein and Reb Yerucham Guralik. Now, a little bit background. Reb Noach Bornstein, he was the biggest Eloi of Mir. He was in Mir. From Mir, he went to Brisk, contemporary with Reb Chenich Fishman. Unbelievable mind. Rabbi Yerucham Guralik never studied in Mir. He was a Radna. But from Radn, he too went to Brisk. So that these three knew each other from Brisk, two knew each other from Mir, and they all wind up within a few blocks of each other in the Mount Eden area, a little bit more north than where you grew up, Steve. You grew up near Yankee Stadium.
Right.
And this was a little bit more north. Reb Noach Bornstein, let me say a few words about him and then about Reb Chenich. Reb Noach Bornstein, in 1930 or 31, Reb Lazy Yehuda Finkel, you know, the Litvish Yeshiva had one problem. It's a problem that exists until today. Yosef, who was your last Rebbe in YU before you went to medical school?
Rav
Rosenzweig. How many Blatt Gemara did you learn that year with Rav Rosenzweig?
In the shir itself?
In the shir itself.
Not the entire Masechta.
How many Blatt? We learned 25 Blatt. 30 Blatt! Bani Shalilam, Shas is over 2,000 folios. And this is a real problem. And you can learn, so you'll send years, Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Batra, Gittin, Kedushin, maybe Ketuvah, Yavama. That's it. What about Moed? What about Kutchin, Tarot? What are we talking about here? So Reb Lazy Yehuda introduced a Pekiyat contest. Whoever would learn in 1 year the three Babas, and I think Ketuvot and Yevamot, whatever, Kedushin and Ketuvot, and take a Bechina, and successfully know all this, Shas, Rashi, Tosfot, Rishonim, would get $50. It was a fortune of money, 1930 money, money during the recession. One of the few, many started, a whole group of eight people, I think. Three dropped out. Four or five succeeded. One of them was Reb Noach Bornstein. Tell you another story about Reb Noach Bornstein. I heard the story directly from the people who were there. Later I read about it. I was happy to read it in one of the Haredi biographies of Reb Velvel. delegation of American rabbis goes to Israel, you know, from the time the state has been organized, we have delegations coming, going. There's a whole delegation coming next month, January. I got an invitation to a whole retreat, RCA, very nice. I don't think I'm going to be in the country then, but it doesn't matter, very nice. So, delegation comes, and of course, they go to visit Rebelville, bringing him good amount of money from his nephew, Rebelville, the Rav, Moriya Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Berg, Halali Soloveitchik, who they know in the family, he was known as Beryl, right? Beryl. Dove is Bear. Beryl, that was his nickname as a kid growing up, like the Lubavitcher Rebbe was known as Mendy. When his wife died, he said that he was crying, and the Rebbe said, it's a very deep fraud, that there's no one left in the world who calls me Mendy. Think about that fraud. So, the Brisker Rav, who was not the most outgoing personality, to put it mildly, and I heard this too from Yeruchim Yerelek many decades ago, then when I came at Aliyah, I already understood the situation here, where I met his Talmidim, his close people, his children. So Rav Velvel opened up and he said to them, Ich verstehe nicht die Amerika. It's like the Amerikanische Rabbanim. I don't understand your America. You're American rabbis, he said. My greatest student went to America, Rav Melech Bernstein. Und man hat nicht ein Wort von ihm. You don't hear one word about him. Es verschwunden geworden. He got lost. He disappeared in America. And that's a very apt comment. You see, Rav Melech Bernstein, I always had the feeling that he's scratching himself. What am I doing here? Where do I fit in here? It's one of the tragedies. I write about this in Washington, that Hitler killed 6 million, but he ruined the lives of another 5 million Jews. No one could be the same. And then here you can say, Rav Noach, right, he didn't suffer. He went to Japan. He never went to Shanghai from Japan because he was so well known. He was such an ilui. He got to Canada. From Canada, he later comes to the United States. But I always had the feeling he was ill at ease, sarcastic, cynical. Raised, by the way, fine children. But he once said to me, I'm revealing all my secrets, but all right, at my age I'm allowed. He once came to see me in Israel, and he spoke about his daughter who had gone to Michalaz. She's two from, he said to me. You understand, you have to be a literature to appreciate what he was saying. Tzifrom, oich, vazachon of frumkai. I knew Reb Noach intimately too. I loved him. I felt for him. It's my Rebbe, my last year in high school. He was a college shiur, but in YU you have the advantage that it's one yeshiva. You can go to a college shiur even though you're still a high school kid. Rebbe Yeruchim Gerelik, he already was a volcano in America. Ugh, he's going to build, he's going to do what he accomplished. Ugh, what an unbelievable individual. He built a school for boys, Yeshiva Zichron Moshe. He built the school for girls, Beth Miriam. He was rubbing a big synagogue. Rav Noach Bernstein had a little shtela. I mean, it was interesting to see. But he already, he was not at home in America, but he didn't give up the battle. He's going to defeat America and turn it into rotten the bone. That was Rav Yeruchim, like a volcano. And I'll never forget Rav Noach Bernstein. I believe I quote this in Washington. It's also a deep fraud. You have to think it out. The trouble is, you won't know what we're talking about. Rav Noach said about Rav Yeruchim, "Efirzich da, v'yatkefirzich in Dratten." He's just like the way he lived in Dratten. He doesn't change his way of life. The way he lives, everything he does, doesn't let America creep into his bones, ki who's that? The only difference is he lets his wife shop in Alexander's.
No one's going to go that well.
Professor Ahrens, you don't understand that. Okay. Let me put it to you this way. We'll mention this name. When Monk and I came back from America, visiting, speaking, teaching, so in our building we had our building was known as the building of rabbis. And among the rabbanim who lived there was Rabbi Yoshua Hutner. His wife was Batsheva Ziv originally, then Soloveitchik, then Hutner, Bzivik Sheni. I have to speak upstairs afterwards. I have to L'chaim today. So she lived in America many years. And when we came back and told her Alexander's is closing, she cried. She said, "That's America, Alexander's." That was a Jewish-owned department store where everyone shopped. When you said you're going shopping, it meant you're going to Alexander's. Until today, my wife can't get over Alexander's, what became a Fordham Road. That was America. That was the Bronx. Now you should know, Alexander's, one part of the family, Chazru B'Tshuva, their kids in Israel, Lamdanim, something remains. It's not like Gimbel's, Klein's, Macy's, Bamberger's, since Nishke Blibin Ashtikel Yiddishkeit. Nothing remained. Alexander's, something remains. And this was the Bronx. This was the Chabura. So, Reb Noach, he already was Americanized. His son was our taught. His son just died from Shmuel Bornstein. I remember him as a little kid. Just died. And excuse me?
My grandson, my son.
Yeah, had him as a teacher.
He
taught in the high school. And you see, he sent his kids to MTA. He Americanized. He was here, willy-nilly. Rav Henoch Fishman was in America, was more with a little bit of happiness. He wasn't so thwarted and frustrated. Rav Yeruchim would have no part of America. His kids already wouldn't go, "Why you?" Chasvei, he taught there, but not for his kids. Follow? His sons, one is no longer alive, but the others, they're Rosh Yeshiva, but not in modern Orthodox schools, in the real right-wing yeshiva. And this was the Bronx. This was the Chabura. Okay? Now, let me just go one step further and end off. By the early 50s, Yeshiva University is expanding, and Rav Shmuel Belkin is on the outlook for good Rebbeim, and Rav Henoch Fishman comes to Yeshiva, and a year or two later, Rav Gershon Yankelevich comes to Yeshiva University, and they're totally at home. This is the morning, Rav Mendel Zaks, the Bochein, Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law, Rav Yeruchim Gorelick already was there, Rav Noach Bornstein was there. This was Yeshivas Rav Yitzchok Chanan that I grew up in. Rav Henoch was very happy, very well liked. There was an Edelkeit about him, a calmness. Interestingly enough, he never walked the steps one by one. He always would go two steps at a time. He says, "Medaf nish mevapel sein from London." It's every quick minute you got there, you're reading the base medish, you're upstairs, you're in the classroom, you're in the library. Why waste time walking up and down? And he was famous for that. Everyone knew that Reb Henoch, two steps at a time. I try to emulate it. In my younger years, I could do it too, two steps at a time. 1964, I believe it was, he took ill. the heart problems began, and unfortunately, they didn't leave him. I remember we were sent to Hillam for him, and hoping against hope that he would pull out of it, but our prayers didn't succeed. And in 1965, he passed away. All right, that's Reb Henoch, that's his life. What I have to do next is talk about a little kid named Ani Rothkopf, where he was coming from, and give you a feeling of this interaction. And I want to give you some more details of what I learned from him, what I saw. And I also want to give you a source on his wife, but we'll have to leave that for tomorrow. Following Reb Henoch, of course, I'm following chronologically, we encounter Reb Meir Kahana. And as they say, that's a horse of a different color. So, yes, Yitzchak.
You mentioned about Reb Melch Bornstein and Reb Gerlach, where they sent their children.
Right.
Where did Reb Henoch Krishna send his?
I'll tell you that next time. I was good friends with his eldest son, MTA. I'm going to bring that up next time and again continue the theme of how the three of them differed. You'll see. But that's the answer to your question. Reb Henoch, I don't know what happened afterwards, but in my time, I knew three. Heshia, we called them. Nebuch is also gone many years. He today would be in his mid-70s, I would say. 73, 74, Masha, maybe 75. Maybe he was 4 or 5 years younger than I am. So what do we do today? We try to recreate the world of Reb Henoch Fishman, and everything I mentioned, I later did research on. I published on Rabbi Kahn Lasterman, I published on Reb Shimon Shkak, I published on Branovich, I published on me, I published on Lazy Yehuda Finkel. I don't know how much I published, but I certainly spoke about in class the dilemma of Das Teira. I mean, you just think about that. I can tell you one other joke, that when in the document, you have simple Sugi Haris, they interview people who were saved. So they're these Hasidic guys who followed Mir and got the visas and went with them and were saved. So they asked them, how does it come, wie kommt es sich, that you're Hasidic guys and you followed and you went with Mir? And they said, very simple. When we heard Reb Chaim Meisser said not to go, we're chassidim. We figured if the Litvishe biggest figure says not to go, we have to do the opposite. So we went, and that's how they were saved. All right, I have three beads. This is for Yitzchak, and Yitzchak, a special gift for you, bringing back memories. You won't believe what I have here. Chavruta, 1958. Wait till you see the names. If anyone is interested, this continues Rav Kook on last week's Pasha and this week's Pasha. It's amazing what they're doing today. If anyone needs a job, they're looking around to teach you to be a Sefer Stam, to be a Sheikhet, and more than Shrita, which is relatively easy, Nikur. That's the hardest part, Treberin. Getting rid of the Git HaNashah, everything you read yesterday, you make a lot of money. If you're an expert treberer, Sam, you won't have to do anything else. You're all set. You'll go twice a year with a sheikh for Israel. They sheikh out of the country. They the cheapest place, they go to South America, etc., Romania, and you go as a treberer, you have it made. If anyone does not have the Lord's Prayer, my last copy, worth taking and passing on, terrific. This is a very interesting article from Jewish Week, the Hasidim regentrifying neighborhoods that have gone bad. And this deals with part of Williamsburg, where they're moving back in again because they want to be near the source. It deals with Crown Heights. This is very interesting. The whole problem of laptops and people taking notes. An article in the New York Times where they claim you cannot concentrate as much when you're playing with a laptop. I don't find that true. I find students who take notes on laptops show me afterwards their beautiful shiur written up. This is an article from the New York Times that helped me with my grandson. My grandson is talking to me ahead about Ben Shapiro. I don't know who Ben Shapiro is. I see this article. I'm now a hero. My grandson sees his grandfather knows who Ben Shapiro is, a frum guy, a graduate of Yeshiva of Long of Los Angeles, or what's called popularly YULA, what's not YU anymore. And he's a real right-wing guy. And he debates. He came to, what do they call it, Palo Alto, and they had to spend a $500,000 or something like that to protect them from the fascists. Okay, Michael, this is for you, very interesting. Shohei Ohtani, if I'm pronouncing it right, he's going to come into the major leagues, and he wants to bat and pitch. Don't call it nonsense.
See what he can do, and then we'll make a determination.
All right. Don't be cynical like Rav Noach Bornstein. The New York Times has a major article.
It's all over ESPN.
Okay. Baruch Hashem. Vera Schlachtman. This is a professor, died at the age of 108, Jew. It's so sad. Communist. When I grew up, every Jew who was a professor in the Bronx, in Manhattan, in Brooklyn, they were all communists. She lost her job during the McCarthy era. Very fascinating New York Times obituary. But what hurts is Nishta Abrekel Yiddishkeit. She never married, no children, no Yiddishkeit. Wow. This is a very sad article from anyone here who's been to Australia. Anyone? Sydney. You can imagine Sydney, a Gan Eden. This is Rabbi Feldman, that's Shmuley Feldman. It's already the next generation of Chabadnikim in Sydney. As anti-Semitism rises, I don't feel safe in Australia. New York Times article. New York Times obituary, Rabbi Neil Gilman. I couldn't believe this obituary. He is the man who led the seminary with a total break from Yiddishkeit, with the gays dancing on our Torah, etc., etc. This famous theologian, they call him, never learned a Daf Gemara in his life. This is coming up with the Supreme Court now, fighting gay rights and abortion with the First Amendment. Very interesting to see the way the Supreme Court rules. If I own a florist shop and you want me to supply flowers to two gays getting married, and I say it's against my religion, people have been fined. And now they're claiming the First Amendment protects me, freedom of religion. How can you force me to do something against my religion? New York Times article, very interesting. This is, I can't believe this story, where the hotel that closed down last year for Pesach, it was supposed to have Jews and go kosher, and they canceled it all. It's a tremendous legal battle. They just ruled that the hotel owns a fortune of money. Will they be paid? How Jews get involved? And imagine if you find out the hotel is not taking you, it's the last minute. What do you do to make a kosher house? Can you get to another? Don't ask. The amazing story of Hedy Lamarr, New York Times. Go and dream. This actress was Jewish, a genius, patents, a gaonit in her own right. Unishta abrekla Yiddishkeit. Unbelievable. Here's New York Times with the Hall of Fame issue. Are you going to let players in that are on steroids? So you have an unbelievable what's going on. And this is Chabad Jewish Week. From Africa to the Arctic, Chabad is now in 100 different countries. And finally, this is on Brooklyn. Spiritual leader at New York Orthodox Community says she's no, I don't want to quote the rest, it's not sneeristic, no feminist. And this is Ke'en, a rabbi of an Orthodox shul, I think it's in the Slope Hill section of Brooklyn. What's it called? Park Slope, thank you, Park Slope section, where you have a rejuvenation of Judaism, people, life, and all that goes with it. Tomorrow morning, there's Rav Hashem at 9:05. I wouldn't miss the class continuation of today. for all that's going on in the State Department? Will they or won't they? Do you remember the ad with the woman dyeing her hair? And the ad would go, does she or doesn't she? Only her hairdresser knows. Will they recognize Jerusalem as the capital or won't they? I still say tomorrow's shiur will be more important than the debate, not the final decision, which I hope will go. Baruch Hashem, I don't want to altif tachkala sutton, but I hope that Trump will mature and start paying back his debts. Until we meet again in health and happiness, thank you all for coming and thank those for listening. Das Vedanya.